I'm dating a junior. He's a football player. He's a quarterback. He's the captain of the football team.
But
I see Eddie and I'm like, ooh, he's cute.
At some point in college, my mother was like, I don't have any more gifts. I don't know what to give you. Sorry. Like it was my fault, you know?
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hankin.
And I'm Laura Wexler.
And this week on the podcast, Christmas Eve engagements. How romantic.
It's like Hallmark. Yeah. Hallmark Christmas.
Two romantic holiday stories about falling in love on the most magical holiday of the year.
That's right. And this first story is shared by Edward and Christina Sledge, who are writers and podcast hosts and filmmakers. And this is about how a fella named Big Eddie engineered a Christmas Eve engagement for them.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
We got two mics here. So this is my beautiful wife, Christina, and I'm Eddie.
And this is our Christmas Eve story.
So it's Brooklyn, 1992. And
Brooklyn's in the house.
It's my second week as a freshman in high school. Now, I'm sitting in gym class with another young lady, and I liked her. So I asked her, I said, hey, so what's your next class? And she said, well, it's lunch. She go to the next period was lunch. So my next class was social science, so I already cut that class. I'm like, I'm following this girl to the lunchroom. So once I go in the lunchroom, the first table that we sit, me and the girl sit next to each other, but across us is these two girls. One name is Tiffany, and the other one is Christina.
So I'm sitting across from him. I'm a freshman. I'm dating a junior. He's a football player. He's a quarterback. He's the captain of the football team.
But
I see Eddie, and I'm like, ooh, he's cute. Ooh, he's charming. So, you know, I'm dating this guy, and then a month later, we break up.
Now, mind you, I'm not paying attention to Christina. I'm still chasing this girl, which later on found out that she didn't like me. So for the first month and some change, me and a friend used to walk the girl, Tiffany, and Christina to the train station, which was like two blocks away every day. But this one particular day, the girl did not show up. So me and my friend still walked Tiffany and Christina to the train station. So while we're walking to the train station, we get there and we turn around and Chris is like, probably like 10 feet away, like she stopped. And her friend, Tiffany, said, hey, Eddie, you know, my friend like you. So I looked behind her, and I'm like, okay, so why is she not coming up to talk to me? And she said, well, my friend is shy. And I'm like, shy? This is 1992. No one is shy. And we in Brooklyn. Like, I never met anyone that was shy. So
actually, I wasn't shy. I just didn't want to be rejected to my face. So, you know what you do in high school. I asked my friend, go over, ask him if he likes me. So, she did.
So, I look behind the friend and I see Christina. She's beautiful and I'm looking at her. I'm like, but I know this is going to be a long road for me. So, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. I'll go out with her, right? And it's not like Christina was ugly. It's just that, you know, I just knew it was going to be a long road for me. So I'm like, eh. And then my friend was like, hey, if you don't, I'm going to ask her if you don't go with her. So I didn't want him to do that. So I'm like, all right, I'll do it. So we all walk over there to Christina. And me and Christina changed numbers. And ever since that moment, you know, even if we broke up in my dreams or whatever, I'm chasing her. Like, I'm still chasing her, everything like that in my dreams. So off and on, we dated and then...
So we're dating for about 2 years, and guess what? He breaks up with me on my 16th birthday. Boo! Yeah. Boo!
There's a reason for that, right? So there's a reason, but I didn't know the reason till after I became an adult and got married, right? So back then, I was insecure, right? So she was always into polo, Guess, you know, fashionable clothes, and all I had, I was broke, so all I had was fatigue, army fatigues, which later on I'll tell you about going to army, but that's all I had. So I knew sooner or later she's going to meet someone to have clothing that she likes and fashion that she likes, and I just ripped the Band-Aid off and beat her to the punch.
Yeah, so, but that wasn't true. I loved him for who he was. But he broke up with me, but then guess what? The next day, he asked to go back out.
I did. I asked to go back out, and she said no.
And I said no.
And I kept chasing her.
Yes, he kept chasing
her. So for the next 2 years, we just kept seeing each other off and on, where we had boyfriend and girlfriend, kept seeing each other.
So fast forward a couple years, I go to Temple University in Philadelphia, and I know Philly's not very popular here, but yes, I went to Temple. He goes to the Army.
Yeah, so,
and he writes me while he's in stationed in Georgia.
Yep, and I'm telling you, I've been chasing her ever since I gave her that number that day. So, yeah, I stayed. And plus, I knew her brother. Her brother went to high school with us after we left. And I still knew her brother. Used to hang out with him. So I got an address from the brother, and I just kept sending the letters when I was in basic training. Right? So, all right. So later on that year, me and some guys, me and some other soldiers went to a club, and a fight broke out, and we got arrested. Now, my first sergeant comes in my room and said, Private Sledge, you know, because you got arrested, we can't let you leave for Thanksgiving break, Thanksgiving vacation. And I may not let you leave for Christmas vacation. So I was like, okay. So I knew I wasn't going to get it, right?
So fast forward, this is 1999, guys. This is the big Y2K, you know, December. So I'm going through this breakup with this guy that I was dating for 3 years at Temple. It was terrible, terrible breakup. It was so bad that I had to get on my knees and I prayed to God and I said, please, Lord, send me the man I'm supposed to be with. So the phone rings and it's my mother. So she goes.
True story. Oh, this is true.
This is all true.
This is all true.
She goes, hey, Chris, Eddie's here in Brooklyn.
Now, before that, right? So my first sergeant comes in my room like the weekend of Christmas. And he goes, you know what, Private Sledge? I'm Espresso Sledge. I'm going to let you go on Christmas leave. So I call my father, which is Big Eddie. And Big Eddie, you know, he's lovable, but he pulls no punches. So I call my father, let him know I'm coming Christmas, because he loves Christmas. So I call my father, let him know I'm coming Christmas leave. I call my friend Rich, and I call her brother Tony, and let him know I was coming. So that's how they knew that I was coming up to Brooklyn. That's how my mother knew.
Yep. So I'm going to Brooklyn from Philly for Christmas, and so I get there, and he's there with my brother.
So when I first got to Brooklyn, I picked my friends up, and I went to Tony's house. And when I'm sitting there, I'm not even expecting Chris to be there, right? No one, I didn't even know she was going to be there. So I'm sitting there, and Chris come out the back room, and she's just glowing. And I'm like, wow, like, this is great. Now I have a car. Now I got a gold chain. Now I got clothes on my back. Now I'm feeling so much good about myself. I'm like, I look good. You know, I got a haircut. I'm looking good.
He did. He looked really good, and he was working out, and, you know.
So now I got confidence. There's no more breaking up if this ever happens again, right? So we sit it down talking, and the next day was Christmas Eve, and we was like, well, you know, let's go somewhere. You know, we haven't seen each other, in 4 years, right? So I said, well, let's go somewhere tomorrow. So we said, okay, so we made a date for tomorrow, Christmas Eve. Now, I get to our house Christmas Eve, and now I got a car and a little bit of money in my pocket. You know, the military don't pay you a lot. Now I got a little money in my pocket. Next thing you know, we have nowhere to go. It's cold. It's freezing outside. I have nowhere to go. So something in my mind told me, well, you know, let's go back to my father's house, Big Eddie, because Big Eddie loved Christina from day one. Like, you know, we used to have the call ID. Like Matt said, call ID. Every time a number come up, my father would tell me that she called, and I'd call her back. So he loved Chris. So I said, okay, let's go to see Big Eddie, right? And Big Eddie lived in the project, so that's the last place I wanted to take this girl to the project.
On a date.
On a date, right? So we couldn't think of anywhere to go. So He didn't even know we was coming back, right? So we go to Big Eddie's house, and I go see someone in the back room. So I leave Big Eddie and Christina in the living room together.
Right. So Big Eddie comes over to me, and he says, "Hey, Christine." Now he calls me Christine, not Christina. I'm Christina. But he said, "Christine, if Eddie asked you to marry him, would you say yes?" Now, again, like, we haven't been dating for, like, almost 4 years, all right? But I go back to that prayer that I, you know, I was on my knees and asked for God to send me the man I'm supposed to be with. And I said, "You know what? Yeah. I'll do it."
Yeah. True story. Yeah. True story, right? So I don't know this, right? So I come out the room, and my father pulled me to the side. And my father said, "Hey, let me speak to you." I'm like, "Yeah." He said, "Christine just told me if you ask her to marry you, she'll do it in a heartbeat." And I'm like, "For real?" Because, you know, we just got back together the day before. We just we on this project date, right? So, you know, I'm like, "For real?" And he said, "I'm dead serious." So I'm thinking, same thing she did with Tiffany back in high school. She was shy, and she asked him to ask me to marry her. this is all real.
It's all true.
All true, right? So I'm saying it like, "Oh, hell yeah. Like, this is a no-brainer. Like, she's going to say she want me to ask. No-brainer, right?" We're not even prepared for this. So later on that night, I proposed to her without a ring. I said, "Okay." She said, "Yeah."
So he proposes. I say yes. There's no ring. Now, if anyone knows me, they know I'm a super duper planner, right? So this is like out of the ordinary for me to accept this proposal, right? So I accepted. I said, "Okay, great. We're going to get married. We start planning a wedding for Christmas in 2000, right?"
It's so 99.
This is a whole year later, right? So we are engaged on Christmas Eve. So he calls me. He's stationed in Georgia. I'm still in Philly. He calls me about a month later, and Eddie said, "You know what? I know we're planning this wedding, but you know what? I don't want to wait a year to marry you. We've been playing around for like 4 years now. I want to marry you now." So he says, "Let's just elope. Let's get married." And I said, "Okay." So, you know,
She said, "Okay, yep."
So I call around, find out, well, you know, what do we have to do? Get a marriage license and everything. So we find this justice of the peace, like officiant, that would do it in a row house in South Philly for
$99. $99.
So,
yep, $99.
So we did that.
So now it's a bit, and now it was a huge snowstorm. Right? So I go pick up, and her college roommate was there. I never met a college roommate. And she had this look on her face, because we need a witness, right? We didn't want to tell our families anything like that, because I know they would have talked us out, except for Big Eddie, but everyone else would have talked us out of it. So we need a witness. So, you know, she looked at me like, "What the hell are we doing?" So, you know, she came, be the witness, and to this day when we see her, she smiles about it. Can't believe we're still together, but she didn't know us. She didn't know me, right? Because remember, Chris just came out this breakup with this other guy. So right, she's like, "Where's this guy at?" Right?
Right.
So once we get to go snowstorm, we get married, we take the friend home, and snow. So we were so broke that she wore her high school prom dress.
Yep, it was white.
And I wore my Army Class A's.
Uniform.
So we was broke, right? So as soon as we get in the back in the car, and my car was like a 91 Chrysler New Yorker with like over close to 200,000 miles. It could crank down any time, right? but we happy, right? So I look in my pocket, and all I had was 2 quarters, 50 cents.
50 cents.
So we started our marriage with 50 cents. So I went to the nearest payphone to call my father, and I told him that we just got married. So him and his girlfriend, Western Union, that's $50. We picked up the Western Union, and we went to KFC and got 2 combo meals as our first meal as a couple. Yeah. True story.
True story.
And we sat there while it was kept snowing, and we sat there and ate the combos.
In our wedding attire.
Yep.
So this is the cool part. So 25 years. So, Christmas Eve of this year will make 25 years.
I propose because of Big Eddie.
Of Big Eddie.
Yep.
And February will be 25 years that we've been married. So we want to dedicate the Stoop story to my brother, Tony, who was killed in Baltimore in 2016. So thank you, Baltimore, for showing us love. We really do appreciate it, and we want to say happy holidays to everyone.
Thank you, everyone. True story.
Oh, gosh, there's so many great details.
Love it. Love it. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with one more story. So this next story is shared by Justine Barron, who is a writer and reporter, investigative journalist. And this story just, it just gets you in all the ways. Take a listen.
So this story takes place in 2012 when two really huge things happened to me at once in my life. The first was that I moved in with my boyfriend. His name was Asterios. Don't look him up. And we were in L.A. He was a stand-up comedian. I wasn't, but he thought I was hilarious. And objectively, I'm not, so like, keep your hopes down. And that was great. You know, we moved it together right after celebrating our first Christmas together with his family in the Bronx. I happen to love the Bronx. My people are from there, too. And that first Christmas was, it was really epic for me. I had never really celebrated a real family American Christmas. It wasn't waspy or anything. It was just, like, loving. I mean, I grew up, like, I was Jewish, but we were non-believers. We did this thing. It was just, like, gifts, you know? And then at some point in college, my mother was like, I don't have any more gifts. I don't know what to give you. Sorry. Like, it was my fault, you know? So this Christmas with Asterios and his family is like, it was his Trinidadian side, like lots of aunties and great aunties. And the best part was the food. His grandmother, who was 90, spent all day cooking. And she made these, I'm going to cry. She made these dumplings that like were the best thing I've ever eaten. So I think about them all the time. Like ginger, soy, like handmade dough, gently, it's a lot. So after we moved in together, you know, that was great. It was romantic, working things out. Big step, big milestone. So at the same time that happened, I started to get migraine headaches a lot. And then I was having them every single day. Like at 2, I know, this is where it gets a little sad, but at 2 o'clock every day, like, okay, game over. That's it for the day. It's pain time. So I don't know if anyone in this audience has suffered migraines. Anyone? Should we give it up for migraines? That was a bad idea because I don't like loud noises. But they're really bad. They're not just headaches. If you haven't suffered them, I mean, God bless your innocent soul. The best way that I could describe a migraine for you, I think actually this is exactly what it feels like. If somebody were to take a vice grip and squeeze your brain for 12 hours until it exploded, I think it's something like that. God forbid you should like bend over. I mean, everything becomes really hard. And so that was my life every day. And because I am like a super, super lucky duck, I also, in our new place, in the middle of the night, I would wake up like, I can't breathe, and with this like rash all over my body. And then at a certain point, my immune system was like, fuck this shit. And so I just started catching every cold you could think of. It was like every illness, minor to major, that I had ever experienced in my life all conspired to like play this big prank on me during the year of my life that should have been really the most wonderful. It was such an odd dichotomy. It's like, hey, baby, everything hurts and my skin's on fire, but you want a sex? So after this year, we were approaching our second Christmas together, and I just, you know, I kept thinking about it, the family, the dumplings, and so we arranged for a trip to New York, and I also needed to get the hell out of L.A., and whatever was poisoning me because it's a dirty place. So my parents had an apartment also in the Bronx that was kept open in the winter. So we left early, and we arrived, I don't know, like the 19th or 20th, and our first day together in the Bronx was, I mean, it was like one of the best days of my life. We walked through Van Cortlandt Park. So I don't know, a lot of y'all probably don't realize the Bronx is gorgeous. And Van Cortlandt Park is, it's got this long path, and there's like woods on both sides, and you can walk all the way to Yonkers. And we did that day. And miraculously, I wasn't sick. I think it was the first day that whole year that I didn't have anything wrong. And I remember so many details about this walk. It's kind of crazy. I could just put myself there. I mean, it was very cold, but it was also sunny, which is always perfect. And his nose was really red. And he wore my dad's coat and my dad's hat. And his hand was really warm. And so there was something very protective about him with me that day. I remember we had a walking stick, and we called it our foster child. And then when we named it, I don't remember what, and then when we dropped it off in Yonkers, I made some kind of joke about how we were abandoning our first child, and he got, like, really sad. We were different, you know? And I remember on the walk, we would, like, we were making up comedy sketches. I had one that I really thought this was going to be great. It was called Squirrel Shade, and it was like if squirrels were drag queens, like, shading each other. Like, my comedy career, it just didn't go that far, so I told you. But, and then, you know, we got back at that night, and we made love, and it actually felt like more, you know. It was really, like, a perfect day. And then the next morning, he starts packing up, and he's like, I got to go to Long Island. My mom, she wants me to go shopping with her. It didn't even, like, make sense. I didn't want him to leave. First of all, I hate it when people change plans. I'm an INTJ, Myers-Briggs. He's, like, very P, so that was a problem. But, and he was going to go to the Bronx. He was going to go to Long Island to see his parents Christmas Eve, so it's like he was going to go and then come back. I was just upset, and he wouldn't talk to me about it, and then he just left. And I, like, really needed him there. You know, things were good. I was pissed off. And then at the end of the day, he calls me, and he's like, I can't come back. I have to go to the urgent care. I don't feel well. It's like, what the hell is going on? You never get sick. But I was the jerk, because he went to urgent care. And I guess because we dared to have one really great day together, we were rewarded with him getting hand-in-mouth disease. Otherwise known as the Coxsackie virus. Not to be confused with hand, foot, and mouth. I don't know what that is. It's probably worse because there's like a foot, you know. So Coxsackie is this like very, very rare virus, and it mostly affects children who play in the woods in the Northeast. So the doctor thought we got it in the Northeast, and Asterios wasn't a child, but he did collect action figures. So Coxsackie is like very contagious. So he was put on quarantine for 10 days. And I was catching a cold, so we didn't think it was a good idea for me to go out there. So we spent Christmas, him quarantined in Long Island, and I was alone, depressed in the Bronx. So day 10 of his quarantine was New Year's Eve, and I was like, well, I don't want to miss another holiday. I can go out there, and we could stay in separate rooms. And so I took the train out there, and when I got off on the platform, you know, he was there. Baby, I was like, Pat, you know, Coxsackie. And he said he needed to give me my Christmas present right there on the train platform. And it was fucking cold. I mean, it wind chill like crazy. So I was just like, no, you can give it to me when we get home. No, we got to do it here. I promise, we got to do it here. And I just kept saying no because I was really, really cold. But finally, I compromised. So there was an elevator that was sheltered, and there were some garbage bins there. And I said, you can give me your present there. Okay. So we went over there, and the present was, it was a tower of, like, tea boxes. And I do like tea. Someone got a text. There were three boxes that were numbered, 1, 2, and 3, and he said I had to open them in order. So the first box, it was, I believe it was a Dunkin' Donuts Christmas ornament, because sometimes he gave me presents you would give a child, and that was good. The second box was a netbook, which is great because I had broken mine. It was a receipt for it, not the whole thing. And then some teenagers came by, like, acting tough, and he was like, don't open the third one yet. So I was like, oh, wait, I think I know what's happening. So the teenagers left, and I opened the third box, and it was a diamond ring, which is why he went shopping. And then he got down on one knee. I don't remember what he said, probably, like, will you marry me or a variant? I do remember his face. Like, he had these eyes where he could just look so loving, and I remember that he was very nervous, and I remember that his cheeks were so puffy, like top puffy, a bottom puffy from the Coxsackie. And I, you know, I wasn't thinking about getting married at that time. I was just trying to get by every day, like, really hard. But I said, you know, saying yes wasn't the hard part. I mean, what more can you want? But somebody, he didn't just stand by me that whole year of me falling apart from a person to a collection of symptoms. I mean, he continued to look at me like I was so beautiful and just loved me so much. So I said yes, and that was easy. But here's the thing. When somebody asks you to marry them and you say yes, the next thing that's supposed to happen is that you're supposed to kiss. And it was still day 10 of his quarantine. And if you think about it, it was actually pretty selfish of him to do it that day. Because given everything I had been through, how weak my immune system was, I mean, it was just, like, honestly, it might have been the very last thing, like, above hurricanes that I needed was Coxsackie virus at that moment. But it was that choice, like, do I jump into this thing and risk my self-preservation that I had spent so many decades working towards, to have this romantic moment that he created and see what happens. And so I did. I kissed him. It was sweet. He was really, like, lost in it, and he was tinged with a little bit of fear of disease. And we got engaged. I did not get Coxsackie, but I got a terrible flu, and unfortunately, the next year was really hard. Like, we had to move a lot. My health deteriorated. I needed some surgeries, you know, lucky duck. And actually, it became too much. We did get married in a courthouse, like, on his lunch break. I had a migraine. And after that, I made him celebrate our anniversary on the engagement. But we didn't make it. I'm actually in the middle of a divorce that's twice as long as the marriage was. I think it's just that it was more than he had signed on for, because I did become so sick for so long. And, you know, then again, however hard it was for him, I think maybe it was harder for me. Not that it's a competition, but I would win that one, having had all of the symptoms except for 10 days of Coxsackie. But the thing is that when you have chronic illness, and as some of you know, 10 to 20%, they say, that you have a lot of bad days, but when you have a good day, you learn to just really, like, make the most of it. And I had two really healthy days in 2012. And on one of them, I took a really long, beautiful walk with my beloved and abandoned our first child. And on the second, I got engaged to be married. Thank you.
This is just unforgettable in the day they spent together tromping through the Bronx and the train platform, and you could just really see it. And in a lot of ways, it's the opposite of a Hallmark Christmas movie, and yet it is so lovely and so bittersweet. It's just wonderful. Thanks so much for listening today. You can visit us at stoopstorytelling.com to learn about upcoming shows.
Including our holiday show, December 11th.
Yes.
At the Senator. The beautiful, historic
That's
Senator.
Right. So the Stoop Holiday Show on December 11th. You can visit stoopstorytelling.com to get tickets. And we want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast. And we will be back soon with more stories from the Stoop.